Hello and welcome to Drilling Insight. I'm Jeremy Verduzco, host and editor of National Driller Magazine. Today I'm joined by drilling trainer, National Driller writer, and co-host Brock Yorty. Welcome, Brock.
Hey, Jeremy, how are you doing?
I'm excellent. And, appreciating today. It's a little early, but I'm hanging in there. So on today's show, we also welcome Jay Egg. Thanks for being on the show, Jay.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm looking forward to this,
interview.
Thanks so much.
Well, we appreciate your expertise. So Jay has worked in geothermal for more than 30 years, helping to educate and advocate for ground source heat technology. He's written or co-written books on the topic and presented at countless seminars and trade shows. We wanted to get his input on the state of geothermal and what he expects in the future and other industry topics. So to get started, I'll hand it off to Brock.
Good morning. I'm super excited to have you on, Jay. And being a legend of this industry and an influencer, my favorite question to ask is, did you choose this industry or did this industry choose you?
I think the industry chose me, but other people might argue if I give you the 30-second story of 1988, and I'm in my first home in Florida, and I have a train condenser, and I killed my compressor, so I put a new one in. And then about that time, my irrigation pump kicked on, and I'm looking at that water. I measured the temperature, and it was 72 degrees, and I was thinking about 95 degree outdoor air temperature. And coming from the nuclear power program, I said, I'm going to put a water refrigerant exchanger in here. I'm going to help this baby not die again. So I did it all in a Saturday, dropped my amp draw and consumption of electricity by half. And my house was crisp. I said, hold the phones. I just invented something really cool that apparently nobody has any idea about. So obviously that second part I learned was not true, because I was very quickly, within a month or two, pre-internet times, within a month or two, somebody told me about Oklahoma State University and the International Ground Source Heat Pump Association. So I went up there and got trained. What else, right?
Okay. Very cool.
So let's set the foundation for the conversation a little bit. What does geothermal look like in 2020? And tell us about the challenges and opportunities folks face working in this industry right now.
Sure. To tell you what geothermal looks like, it's important to start with what does it look like in a house or a building. The number one thing in a house or a building, it is going to be an all inside piece of equipment because the outside portion is underground. As far as for the building, what it does is it eliminates the need for combustion heating in the building, because it is a heat pump and it can heat winter, summer. So what it does is electrifies the building, which is what the industry is going toward. The industry, however, is just barely getting up to speed on where the governments want them to be as they roll this out for these 2030 and these 2035 and these 2040 and 2050 goals. And those goals are to completely eliminate any combustion heating in any building anywhere. That is the goal because of our whole global warming thing. And so that's called beneficial electrification. And that's the state of the industry. Our workforce is there, but they haven't been cross-trained yet. In other words, if you're a heating contractor, you can go over into this. If you're a driller, you can go over into this. If you're a heat pump specialist, you can go over. If you're a natural gas employee, you can go over into this. So that's where we are. We're in workforce training and cross-training and retraining building trades.
You've made the case for geothermal for years, Jay. And you obviously promote it and are very passionate about it. What is that frustrating no, this won't work answer that you hear? And how do you counter it?
Okay. There are a couple of different no this won't work answers that come. The first, of course, is the out of hand. I had a friend who did it. It doesn't work. Something 30 years ago or even something last year. Those are always a little bit difficult, and they require somebody to have an open thought process to answer that. And I'll get back into more detail on that. More often than not, the biggest general overarching no has to do with, I want to put in a heat pump, and this guy says you can just put in an air handler inside and one of those little condensers outside. That's an air source heat pump. You want to tear up my yard to put in the pipes. That's a non-starter for me. So that's hard to overcome. And the interesting thing is with that saying, that's hard to overcome, if they just do not want anything outside torn up, then sometimes the wife, and I'm being very honest, the woman of the house loves the idea of not having outside equipment anymore. So she's usually the biggest asset in this. But in the big picture, there is an infrastructure investment that involves a cost that is at least one third to one half of an entire system cost to do the ground loop. So, and I'm just going to stay with a single family home. What might cost you $15,000 to put in for a state-of-the-art train, 19 SEER system, will probably cost you $30,000 to do a geothermal system because you have to put in a well or two. So there's one third increase in cost. Fortunately, most areas of the United States, including some super areas like New York and much of the Northeast and even California, have a lot of rebates and incentives to cover that, and it well more than covers it. And that's usually what saves those customers. And then there are those that simply want it. It's kind of like, well, I have a Tesla 3. I just got it a couple of months ago. It is like a toy to me. I'm so excited because it's a remote control car. I can push my button on my phone and it will drive to me. And I'm like, I'm as happy as I was when I was 10 years old with it. I don't care that I can drive around and it's just fun. A lot of people like it because of the creature comforts. They know, and they can show their neighbors that they have the best, quietest system on the market. When you buy a geothermal system, you are buying the finest HVAC system that money can buy. And so a lot of people just know they want it. So there's quite a few different people out there, but the really big picture for the industry is getting this into not a one-off installation, and you'll have more questions about this later, I know, but turning it into a utility. For example, in my house, in my little four-bedroom house on any street USA, I have city water, I have city sewer, I have city electric, I have city gray water even. I have, of course, cable. And how Stone Age is it if the entire world is switching off of gas consumption to not have a city geothermal ambient line that you just tap into? It just stubs into your house. It's been done since the 80s. So that's kind of where it's going. And many of these models are going to put drillers so busy that they won't even know what to do. I'll even, if you want me to, or I'll follow up and show you some of the studies done. They need, in the right-of-ways where these neighborhoods are done, they need one 500-foot borehole every 20 feet forever. That's how it averages out and makes sure there's enough capacity for exchange. Okay. Pretty cool stuff. And it's competent, and it's hitting the books right now in Massachusetts for the city of Boston.
Yeah, that's definitely a lot of potential work for drillers, for sure. So the you'd mentioned the tax credits, and you know, everyone in the industry knows that tax credits for geothermal have come and gone and come back, and you know, there's federal, state, all sorts of different credits. But the latest federal credit shrinks after the first of this year. It shrinks into 2021, and then it sunsets again. So
sure does.
Does that create some uncertainty in tax policy, and if, you know, how customers respond to it? And if so, how does that affect the geothermal industry?
It affects the contractors. Usually the contractor owner are usually the ones that get that benefit, right? Mm-hmm. They share it, they do whatever. And it does affect them where they're not getting as much of a rebate. I have heard when I talk to contractors such as in New York, I seem to do a lot of government work in New York, and it's very difficult when it's dropping. People will hold off starting jobs till they hear the new omnibus thing came that added the next rise, and then they'll do it all. It drives them crazy. Meanwhile, I, as an engineer feasibility guy, they keep designing them. They don't care that it's going out. So I would not like to be a contractor. You're totally on the yo-yo string. It's very difficult for them and for the drillers. However, just as long as we're on tax credits, the state of New York has a lot of money to give away. It's called NYSERDA. That's the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. And every state has something like this. They get a little bit off of the electric bills for everybody, which helps them implement green programs. They have so much money to give away. They have, for example, in New York City and Westchester, they've got the entire federal tax credit, the normal state tax credit, which is $1,500 a ton, and $5,000 bonus right now. And that's because in New York City, they have a moratorium. They are not hooking up any new gas customers because of capacity. So by the time you get done in New York City or Westchester, which is an upscale area north of the city, you make money by going with a geothermal. And I'm sure that they've been busy. One of the big residential companies there, Dandelion, which is a Google X spinout, has done 1,000 systems there, you know, so that's pretty good, you know, for a company. I did 1,000 a year when I was in my heyday, but that was in a great big area.
Yeah. Well, with working in several states across the country, being an influencer, if you were given the magic wand to create a policy or regulatory structure that would better support geothermal, what does that look like to you?
I'll answer that by giving a couple of examples of something that has worked really well. One example is in Valley Stream, New York, there was an elementary school that was installed, and they got together with American Water and the New York State Department of Public Service, and they said, let's heat and cool this school completely on exchange from potable water. So they went in and they put in a separate exchange building that all it did was grabbed BTUs off of the potable water and put it back in to the potable water line, because it's a double wall titanium exchanger. And or they sink BTUs into the water, depending on if it's summer or winter. This has been in since 2016, has performed marvelously. It's a 40,000 square foot school that was on gas and had never had air conditioning before. So this was a precedent. Now to go very close by, just to give another example of that, in Toronto, they pull in their drinking water from Lake Ontario. And they pull in the drinking water for all of downtown there. And what they do is they send that through a bank that would fill an airplane hangar, a large airplane, passenger airplane hangar, full of exchangers, and exchange that water to make chilled water for the entire downtown district, 73,000 tons. So there they have an opportunity. It becomes an infrastructure thing where the geothermal is distributed to all of downtown. It's gone, so that went in 15 years ago, and it's gone so well that they are tripling the size of that. And there are drillers like crazy out there on the street to catch peak areas. They've got to do extra drilling, drilling fields where there are extra exchanges for source and sink. So what I see, the big answer, and I could go on and on about other programs where there have been centralized ambient geothermal distribution. I said this in 1995 on a network television program where I was being interviewed in Tampa. The gentleman who interviewed me said, where do you see this going? I said, at this rate, I see within 5 years, and that shows how young I was, things don't move that fast, within 5 years, this has the potential to be an infrastructure-based technology where you just tap into an existing ambient geothermal district line. And then it's the government's problem to make sure that line stays between 40 and 90 degrees. It would be just for geothermal. And at the end of the neighborhood, say it would have a well field or a cooling tower or even a boiler if it was a very cold place and they just needed that for emergencies. Either way, when it becomes infrastructure, then people never have to worry about loops again. What a messy thing that they never have to think about again. Just kind of like your average in-city person never has to think about a water well. He hooks up to the city water. That's where I see it going. That's when we're over the top. And it will go that way. That's what's going on in Boston right now, as a matter of fact. They were replacing the entire natural gas web, which is old iron or steel. They're replacing it with high-density polyethylene. And they got a few people involved that did a feasibility study that said it cost the same to replace it with an ambient geothermal line. So that's how they're converting Boston over. So there'll be a big one eventually as they get done.
So you had mentioned a few projects, New York, Toronto, you know, other areas. Can you tell us about a project that you've just wrapped up or one that you're excited to kick off in the near term? Tell us about something you're excited about, a project.
About 2 years ago, it's important to pre-qualify this. I have worked with the state of New York and Long Island Geothermal Association before there was a New York Geo. Now, New York Geo is one of the most successful state-based orgs on geothermal in the country. So I was up there working with Long Island the year before this happened, and then they started the New York Geo. And then within a year, one of the New York Geo advocates, his name was Donovan Gordon, was hired by NYSERDA, the government-based organization, to become the director of what we call clean heating and cooling, means it doesn't burn fossil fuels. So he's a director and has overseen a program that has just grown and grown to the point where it has an incredible amount of money. And being a government, they have to do all the checks and balances to get it into the right hands. But they have an incredible amount of money to put into the development of geothermal technology statewide. Their goal, as an example, in New York City alone, there are 1.1 million buildings. They have to convert 900,000 of them to geothermal by 2050. That's a monumental task. Thankfully, it's an island and it's surrounded by water, and much of that can be done in any number of ways, including surface water exchange, which works very good. We found out another thing, the MTA, which has hundreds of miles of underground tunnels, pumps out millions of gallons a minute dewatering that goes into the East River and the Hudson. That can all become exchange water. Not to mention city water that's passing by, a lot of the government buildings could be tapped as a quick answer to geothermal exchange for buildings as long as they don't get out of a safe temperature bandwidth. Oak Ridge National Laboratories did a test to determine what that safe temperature bandwidth is. So my biggest thing right now going on, we just finished engineering a geothermal exchange for a New York-based hospital, okay? And the only reason, this is kind of, this will throw a little bit of a wrench in it. The only reason they considered it is because in this pandemic time, there are two things we really are worried about. We all know about COVID-19. There's one, if you Google it, you'll be like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this was going on. Legionnaires' disease. It's completely masked by COVID, all the same symptoms. Yeah. So many people who've come in to be tested for COVID or treated for COVID really had Legionnaires, which is a bacterial infection. Yeah. And so it's made it complex and it's increased the number of cases. Mm-hmm. So my point is this hospital had been, since I didn't say their name, I can say it. They had been sued enough times for Legionnaire people moving into the hospital to recover and catching Legionnaires because they were in there. Mm-hmm. And the mortality rate, if you're in the hospital and catch more Legionnaires, is 25%. Wow. Flip a coin twice. You know, that's 25% chance you'll make it out of there alive. If you catch Legionnaires. So we're in a very, and that's part of my duties on the IATMO staff. We're in this safe, we're creating a manual for the safe shutdown and reopening of buildings, because a lot of the public only knows COVID. There's just not anything else in the mix. This has really crept up on a lot of people. So as I say that, we just got to engineer the first problem hospital to go to geothermal. And it was brilliant to the board of directors, because here they have three great big cooling towers. There's just a big, big red goat Ghostbusters cross out there. And then there's two huge wells that do about 45 gallons a minute, 4,500 gallons a minute into the Magathy Aquifer. And that's what they're doing to mitigate that. And everyone will be different. It will depend on if you're competent rock or if you're over an aquifer. But the other big one right now, which will be, which is being written up for the cooperator, which is a, I guess, not knowing, not living there, I didn't realize this. It's a very well-read magazine in New York, because it has to do with people who live in apartments. But they interviewed me about a project that we're into the second phase of engineering on. And it involves two 20-story apartment buildings in the Bronx that are converting off 100% gas to 100% heat pumps. And they just engaged us in the full engineering, which is very expensive, the full engineering module of the project. So we're heavily engaged in that. And that one, NYSERDA is excited about, because it's the biggest one in New York City to brownfield it to geothermal.
That's excellent. You know, so talking about jobs you're involved in, then we, you know, with LinkedIn and what's going on throughout the industry, we see these new construction projects popping up, stadiums and airports. And I remember the excitement of the Detroit Central train station.
Right.
But I believe you or a colleague posted something about where a geothermal field could go. What are you excited about? A project that you'd like to see go geothermal that still has an opportunity to?
There is a large project in Long Island right now that involves an ice rink, and it's kind of a new city center. And it's interesting. And I'll tell another story after this, if you have time, that is probably, you'll probably never hear about, but it's probably one of my favorite ones to remember. But in this story, they have this large, and I don't remember the name of it, I'm sorry, but this large community center that includes an ice rink and shopping and all this. And they had it planned with natural gas going in. So they're working on that, on getting that switched over to geothermal. And that may not be exactly what you were looking for, but I think this next one will lead into it. Many people don't know this, but the most expensive state capitol in the United States that was ever built is the Albany State Plaza, the Empire State Plaza. If you don't know about it, a couple little factoids. Its value is $2 billion, and it was built by Rockefeller when he was the governor. New York State till 2000 to pay it off. It was ridiculously expensive. The point is, it was all heated and cooled by high energy steam. And when they were getting ready to upgrade the system, somebody told me about it. So I pro bono went and started writing articles. And 3 years later, they've ripped out all their old plans to go with CHP. And now they're going fully electric and putting in electric chillers. And so I do know that a person and people can make a difference. And the state really didn't want to do this, but something I'm starting to realize about government is, even though they know they have to go completely green over here, this product's always already moving. Don't mess with something that's already moving. And we messed with something that's already moving and caused them to go back and turn around. And that almost got me blacklisted. But at the same time, now I don't know, I may still be blacklisted, but nobody's told me I can't come back yet. I really upset a lot of people on that one.
Okay, you cut out a little bit when you said built by Rockefeller.
Yes.
What was Rockefeller's involvement? How did it get to $2 billion?
So when Rockefeller was the governor, he claimed eminent domain on all of downtown Albany. And it happened because he was embarrassed by visiting royalty, who you could tell they were turning their nose up at their downtown. And he just said, forget about it. He did eminent domain, didn't care, you know, could not get away with this today. Just if I showed you an aerial of this thing, it looks like an alien nation landed there. It is so surreal. You can't even imagine it. Most people don't know about it because it's still a dirty little secret because it was forced by Rockefeller. But if you Google Empire State Plaza, you're not going to believe what's there. Nothing is built like this. Nothing is built like this anywhere else. It is its own thing. And it was his thing. And it literally, he built it in the 60s. It took the state of New York till 2000 to pay it off. It was so drastically overly expensive.
So speaking of expensive, obviously drilling process is, you know, disruptive and requires a large CapEx to get involved. And there's so many different industrial drilling aspects, from water wells to cathodic and geotechnical and caisson and that stuff. And then we have geothermal. And every couple of years we get ramped up and we have great companies that step in and they get into geothermal and then things, you know, slow down. What advice can you give to drillers about geothermal? You know, what is your recruitment pitch to get us some good reputable geo? And there are some great companies out there.
Yeah. Two things are this. You really got to be your own person. And I think you know that. Become an approved installer, accredited installer through IGSPA, which is now GEO, and get listed with them, because without exception, I tell everybody, I got a call from some guy from California Monday. I sent him the link to the GEO, to the accredited installer page from that state. So it's the best thing for me to do and it feels right. So I say, get an accredited installer and get registered with the local state, because like with New York, if you get registered with NYSERDA, they will put you on an automatic funds transfer, so you don't even have to worry about it. And they really want to give this money away. All you got to do is prove you have the $2 million insurance and liability. And you know, it takes a little while, but it is the best thing in the world, because the minute you send the email, you get the funds for the invoice. And plus, in my case, and I'm not the exception, if you're on their accredited list at the state, it's one thing to be on IGSPA's accredited list, but if you get on that state's accredited list, you're gonna be busy. There's no two ways about it. No matter what the situation is, it's not slowing down anytime soon. If I were a driller, I would be registered just exactly that way. I'm an engineer, so I'm registered that way with the state. You go onto the state website and you're looking for a flex tech consultant to do feasibility studies, I'm right there. And so,
yeah.
Just got to open up that portal to bring the money in.
Yeah. So Jay, you had mentioned IGSPA, and you know, for ages they've been the training source for folks working in geothermal. They just announced recently that they're transferring from their longtime home at Oklahoma State University to be with the Geothermal Exchange Organization. What does this say about the industry?
That I don't, you know, that's a good question. I can't say what that says about the industry. I really can't, but I see this as a good move. I see the Geothermal Exchange Organization wanting to take the current training programs and put them through standardizing, so that they're acceptable for all people and all, you know, whether you're taking PDHs, CEUs for AIA or whatever, so you can take it. And I I don't have any problem with ICSP at all. I've recorded several great programs for them, but they don't, they haven't had the ability to get what I would consider to be, I can put it this way, the same program that's recorded on their website gets one CEU. That same program is over at New York Geo's website or at Half Moon's website and gets eight CEUs. Okay. So I don't know what to say about that, except that I think that the Geothermal Exchange Organization is cleaning house and doing a very good thing to make sure that everybody feels included. That's all I can say about that. It wasn't always this way, but it's become this way the last 10 years. And there's a reason they made the choice, which I don't, I'm not privy to all that, but this is hopefully gonna be a fairly pain-free move over to Geo. And I think that we're gonna find that they are going to do a remarkable job of making it affordable. It'd be like dealing with Atmo or dealing with ASHRAE or dealing, we want them to have that same type of recognition. So I think they will. I've been having weekly calls with them at their invitation just to talk about these training criteria. So yeah. I'm sure they're on the right track.
So I'm not sure if Brock has any more questions, but I had one quick question. You had kind of touched on geothermal as infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Earlier, and I had interviewed some folks with, I think you of Texas Austin, maybe last year, that are trying to spearhead initiatives to get more investment and more attention on central citywide geothermal and and those projects, like from a drilling industry perspective, since this is a drilling podcast. Like, what needs to happen in order for there to be broader buy-in for that kind of thing?
I like that question. My next call is with a young lady up in Minnesota, and she is, and this is answering your question directly, I promise you. She is with the, give me one second, Minnesota Environmental Partnership. And she is in a position, she talked about the hundreds of billions of dollars of fresh water pipe they've got, drinking water pipe they've got to remove and replace. And this, the number one thing we need to do is, and this is what I'm telling New York, I haven't had much luck yet, whether you're sewer, water, electric, we've got to get all these, and I could go on, but we got to get all of these to go through a vetting process of get them out of silos and see what can be used together for exchange. And that is the number one thing that needs to happen right now. For example, in New York, last year at this time, I'd been contracted by a city in Western New York to, while they're putting in new water, to do drinking water exchange through city owned exchangers for the same houses. But the New York Department of Health had an old regulation on the books, and they simply were not allowed to let that happen under any circumstances. Meanwhile, right up across the other side of Lake Ontario, they're doing it to the tune of 200,000 tons of exchange. And meanwhile, they're doing it down in Long Island. And over at Stanford University, they just did a large revamp where they're using drinking water and for drinking water to do exchange for their chillers, primary exchange. So I could go on and on. They've been doing it in Stockholm, Sweden since the 80s. Yeah. So it's just an educational process, and I'm working where the resistance is the lowest. In other words, I have advocates there. So I'm over in Minnesota for this one. I spoke at their geothermal conference before COVID shut everybody down in late February, early March this year. I don't know if I met her there, but she's moving on it.
Yeah. So with that, I think we'll wrap up today's episode. Thanks again, Jay.
Welcome. This is so such a privilege to work with you guys.
Well, we love having you, and you know, many in our audience work in geothermal, so I'm sure this conversation will give them a lot to think about. So, you know, Jay, we've spoken before, but I didn't get your background on how you got into geothermal. I think it's hilarious that you actually discovered heat exchange.
Yes. And think about it. I was a nuclear power electrician in the Navy. And so we had to constantly cool stuff down there, but we used seawater. And it was funny to me. I was going, why are you using air for this? Water is like 30 times better. So I did that. And I thought, I must be the smartest guy in the street because nobody else is doing this.
Well, I think it's funny that you stumbled into it and you know, and then the rest is history. So Brock, what did you think?
One, it's been excellent to just learn today and talk geothermal. I've been very passionate about geothermal since I was on the Ball State, the first phase of Ball State in 2007. Those 1,300 holes, and before Suez, I got to work with a great company in the Midwest that did the George Lucas Museum in LA.
I love that job. That's beautiful.
They did a great job. And so getting to hear from you and just the stories and where we can go as an industry with infrastructure aspect is what I really enjoyed.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thanks again to Jay Egg. And Jay, where can the audience find out more about you?
They can just Google egggeo.com, or they can, my email address is my name, jegg.geo@gmail.com.
Okay. So are you working on an interesting project, or do you have industry wisdom to share? Go to nationaldriller.com/contact us and send me an email to be considered for a guest spot on Drilling Insight. And of course, you can find fresh episodes of the show on our website and on Apple Podcasts every other week. Search for Drilling Insight and hit that subscribe button. Visit our website also for the latest drilling industry news, and don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And until next time, this is Drilling Insight.